plan was, certainly our time was set by operations on the farm, so we knew we had a maximum of 3 months before cows started to calve and stuff like that. So, you know, that's the first thing to realise is how long have I got, how much money am I prepared to spend, and how much can I spend per day to see that through. The places we wanted to go, I talked about that with my daughter because it was her gap year, and we initially thought we'd like to go to Vietnam, and then we looked at the distances we could cycle there, and it wasn't quite enough in the countries we wanted to do. So we looked a bit further afield. We looked at going from BC to DC, British Columbia to Washington, DC, and that was a bit too far. So the compromise was somewhere in Europe, and Turkey and Greece and Albania seemed really a bit novel. And because we call ourselves cycling across borders, we like the idea of crossing borders, maybe between places that have really high borders. And in the past, of course, there's been conflicts with Greece and Turkey and Albania, and the feelings in the countries are still left over from those periods. So, yeah, we were able to sort of think, well, we're crossing those borders, and maybe in doing so, we'll get the locals to even think a bit more kindly of each other.
I mean, we should point out that you are a pretty dedicated cyclist anyway, so you were just approaching this as a novice cyclist. But so what sort of distances did you set yourself? And I mean, how realistic can you be about that, I guess, not really knowing what the terrain is like that you're actually cycling on?
I think I was aware of the kids not perhaps doing as much training as I'd done, and that certainly made a difference to the distances. We didn't want to be cycling every day, so we couldn't get, thousands of kilometres. So it was a compromise there. We looked pretty closely at what websites were available in terms of terrain, and a couple of sort of maps that had a few brown areas for the high bits. So I had an idea from a fair bit of research work and looking at other people's stories of cycling in Turkey, especially the types of distances or hours that we wanted to cycle each day, and where that would leave us, and how many days it would take to get from Ankara to Istanbul, because we wanted to have 3 or 4 days to look around there. So I'd done a fair bit of work on that, and being aware of the weight that we were carrying, because we were carrying all our camping gear and clothes. So what you might cover on a road bike, for example, at 30 k's an hour, you certainly can't do that distance with a touring bike and a sleeping bag and a whole lot of other stuff.
So what were your distances then? What was the overall distance that you aimed for, and what did you try to achieve each day?
It ended up at about 70 k's a day. Some days we did, I think the longest day was 120, a fairly flat day, and also after about 100 k's we realised that the place we thought would have all sorts of accommodation options had none. So you just have to keep cycling. The shortest day was probably about 30 k's when there was a couple of mountains involved, or we just wanted to go a short distance to the next town to see a ruin or a feature or something else. Yeah. So about 70 k's average.
And what was the total then, from start to finish?
It was just over 2,000, I think 2,100. And on the days we cycled, we'd cycle at about 15 k's an hour, including stops. So, the period we were cycling might be 20 k's an hour if the conditions were good. And that would mean about 5 to 6 hours on the bike on the days we rode.
So that's reasonably relaxed then, which is good. So before you went then, you had a pretty clear idea, did you, of which roads you'd be riding on and where you might be stopping and all that sort of thing?
Yeah, I did. I wanted to know that so that I wasn't thinking about it on the day. But we certainly varied the plan a little bit when we spoke to locals and sort of if we could understand what they were saying. When we mentioned the place we were going to and I'd point it to on the map and they'd shake their head vigorously and say, no, you can't go there, that'll take forever, or, that road's not good. Now, sometimes that worked against us because they were saying, you can't go there, that's too hilly. But for people who don't ride bikes or don't realise the hills you've come across the previous day, a slight rise in the road is a mountain. And sometimes we avoided places that probably we could have easily cycled. Alternatively, they said, yeah, you can do that. And, you know, they do it on a moped and we've got to suddenly try and do it on a bike.
I mean, there must have been a lot of surprises then, were there, in that regard? Because obviously you wouldn't have really known what the terrain was going to be like and how steep the mountains were and that sort of thing.
Yes, there were, and I was pleasantly surprised. I was worried about the road conditions, mainly. Secondly, the manners and courtesy and understanding of drivers. And I must say that Turkish drivers are more considerate than Australian drivers on the roads. Yeah, because they're used to slow traffic. There's people walking, there's donkeys, there's motorbikes, and there's tractors driving along all those roads. And so if you're in a if you're in a car or a truck, then you're dodging, weaving, slowing, and being careful of all that slower traffic and expecting it too. So people on a bike, yeah, give a wide berth and a toot and a wave and away they go.
And what about other bikes? Did you are there many people who ride bikes around those areas as well? And people who are doing what you're doing?
We came across a couple doing tours, cycle tours, some for charity, often with a charity purpose in mind. And it was a bit off-putting when we thought we were doing pretty well cycling around Turkey to have somebody say, oh, we're off from Norway to China. So we felt a bit inadequate in some cases, but often you passed a couple of people who were older and on cycle tours in the sort of more populous areas along the Mediterranean coast. But local cycling in some of the tourist areas, mountain biking was coming along, and there were clubs of young kids and sort of young males in Lycra doing mountain biking. And but in general, only the towns on the flat had kids or old men riding, you know, sort of old bikes around town.
Now, what about your bikes then? So, which is another thing to consider, I imagine, because you didn't take your bikes with you, did you?
Yes, we did. We'd packed them all up in boxes, made sure we went with the airline that carried the most free luggage, and then unpacked them, hoping that the fragile stickers had been heeded along the way. And fortunately, when we put them all together in Turkey, they were fine, they were ready to go. And the reason why we took our own is because they're purpose-built for touring, and I didn't know if we could come across them in Turkey, and if we could, they would have been imported from Holland or Germany, and probably would have cost a fortune rather than being locally produced, if indeed that occurred. And we were happy with that because it was nice to train and practice on the bike that you knew you were going to ride. You know, the seat's the same, the handlebars are the right height, and you don't mess around, yeah.
And packing as well, because you mentioned you have to obviously carry everything on the back of your bike. So how disciplined do you have to be about what you take with you?
Well, I gave the kids a list, and, you know, it was two sets of good clothes, three sets of bike clothes, and nothing else. And I figured that if we needed clothes anywhere along the way, they were going to be cheaper in Turkey than they were here. So that worked pretty well, really. I would say that we live with too many clothes, Jeremy, from day to day. Once you cycle to her for a couple of months, you realise you can do it pretty lightly.
Did you want to pick up things along the way, though? Because once again, that'd be very hard. You wouldn't really have anywhere to put souvenirs or any of those sort of things, would you?
It was difficult. Then again, it was really nice to be able to say to the carpet shop salesman, mate, look, have a look at the bike. Where am I going to strap that to? And the T-shirt sellers and the and everybody else who was trying to make a trade, it was really nice to be able to say, well, look, I'd love to, but I just can't. And at the same time, as you say, there were things that you'd like to bring back, but you've got to do that next time or just take a photo. But, you know, we brought up a couple of light little souvenirs the things that people gave us that have more meaning anyway.
Now, accommodation then. I mean, it sounds like you wanted to keep things a bit open on that in that regard. So were you able to pre-book anything, or was it just a case of ride to the town and see what's there?
In the big cities, in Ankara and Istanbul, and a couple of the larger Mediterranean cities, we booked ahead, and certainly Gallipoli. Because that was peak season around Anzac Day, so I got in early, probably 6 months, 3 months, yeah, 3 to 6 months beforehand to book some of those places. And certainly, say, our arrival into Istanbul, I just wanted to rock up on the bikes and not have to worry about, you know, now finding somewhere in a big city. So only those locations I pre-booked. The rest, we knew the town that we were sort of heading towards. We knew that they weren't small towns, so they should have something. But camping grounds are pretty few and far between. It's cheap hotels and pensions, family-run pensions, and that's what we'd do. If we went past the bus station, for example, on the bikes, there'd be people there shouting out to us, you know, do you want a hotel or do you want a cheap room? More so in Greece than Turkey, but certainly in the tourist towns of Turkey, that was the case, where you'd almost wait for the touts to come and find you.
Did you take a tent as well, just in case?
Took a tent and used that a number of times, mainly along the beach areas where there were some camping grounds. I thought we might try some just off-road camping, and certainly people who we met were doing it really cheaply, just camping on the sides of roads and things. But it's so cheap to stay at a family-run pension. You meet a family, you get a nice shower. It's not always hot. You get some breakfast, and you've probably made a nicer contact than if you were just parked out the road and under a tree in your tent.
What about security as well for the bikes? Was there ever any issue there, or worry that something might happen to your bike or it might get stolen?
Certainly I was worried, because I wanted to make sure that we, you know, we finished the journey, or that if one of us lost our bike, you know, it wasn't a case of the other one having to jog along beside. But I must say that Turkey is a really pleasant place to be. You do not feel threatened. The immediate reaction is, it's an Islamic country, and the women will be, you know, stared at or spat at or anything, you know, throw stones, whatever. It doesn't happen. And we left the bicycles. We'd still put a lock on occasionally, but we soon realised that, people just leave their stuff around happily. They don't lock up their cars. Apart from the cities, of course, Istanbul, we made sure they were under lock and key there. Mm. And sometimes in the tourist areas, people would say to us, if we got off the, if we stopped at a shop, they'd say, now make sure you look after your bike here, because they might have had troubles before. And it's not usually Turkish people in that case. It's usually people who've refugees or illegal immigrants that have made their way into the country that are trying to, I guess, survive somehow.
Are there any issues with taking bikes into any of these places as well? In terms of luggage restrictions or any of that sort of stuff, or, you know, well, no problems there?
No problems there. It just has to be, for the airline, it has to be boxed up into a box. That means disassembling. Yeah, we had, our bikes are quite heavy, so they weigh almost 18, 20 kilos. So that's why we needed a 30 kilo limit to not have to pay too much. But no problem. The issue was, I suppose, going from Turkey to Greece, that we had to put them on ferries, and a couple of times in Turkey we went on buses, and so we'd have to make sure that we told the bus company or were there early so we could get the bikes underneath the buses, or take big enough buses that they'd fit underneath. And the ferries, I guess, for me, being a spendthrift, or thrifty rather, The ferries are, the more expensive ferries are the fast catamarans that don't allow much luggage anyway. So that was an out for me. We could take the slow ferries and stick the bikes on.
Now, it's a very weather-dependent way to travel as well, of course. Did that play any part in your choice of when you were going? I mean, did you try to pick a time of the year when you were more likely to be, to have suitable weather?
Well, I guess, no, I was... It was dictated to us by what I can do here on the farm, and this sort of moving into winter period is the easiest time for me to leave. And fortunately, coinciding with spring, of course, in Europe. And that's great, because by high season in the summer, there's people everywhere, and the prices go up for all things. So spring was fantastic, and in 3 months, we had 3 days of rain. 2 days of slight drizzle and one day of thunderstorms, humid thunderstorms, and I don't think we had many really horrendous head winds either. So that April to June period was sensational cycling weather in Turkey, certainly.
So you're probably very lucky there, were you?
Oh, fantastic, yeah. Some days we'd ride along and I'd say to the kids, this does not get better than this. This is the best day to cycle you could possibly imagine. Yeah, and we had a few days of that.
What was their response at that stage?
It depends if it was downhill or uphill. If it was uphill, there'd be no response. And if it was downhill, they'd have a big smile on their face. But, I think they realised after a while that it was pretty good fun.
Now, what about visas as well? Is there anything particularly you had to do as far as visas were concerned? Or can you just do this on a normal... the visa that anybody would need to go and visit these places?
Yeah, it's a normal tourist visa. Turkey... you pay a nominal amount at the airport when you turn up for Australian citizens. And Greece and Albania, you didn't require any fee or visa to get in there. And so that was pretty straightforward. And that was something to consider. I mean, it wouldn't have prevented us from going if there had been a convoluted process to get a visa. But it was nice just to be able to sort of stroll up.
Now, this is something you had done before, of course, a bit of bicycle touring overseas. I mean, compared to maybe doing a bus tour or driving or any of those other perhaps more typical ways that people might go and experience countries, what do you consider to be the real benefits, I suppose, of travelling by bike in places like these?
That's a really good question. Because some days you wonder why you are doing it. You know, when your bottom is sore and, it might be a bit tough, you're sort of on a busy road and there's a fair bit of traffic and you think to yourself, well, this is really not that enjoyable. But I would recommend cycle touring to anybody, apart from the physical benefits from it. You get to see the countryside. You get to meet the people, and certainly in Turkey, they will call you from the side of the road to stop and have a cup of tea or a chat. Not that they can necessarily converse, and my Turkish was pretty ordinary, but you get to meet people, and you can do it all at your own pace. So you can stop, you can divert, you can leave any time of the morning. People on bus tours, it's breakfast at 7, and it's out at 7:30, and away you go. And you can choose your destinations to be easy cycling. You can do tours that are only 8 days long. You can just go from around a city, on a bike, hire one and go for a ride around a city and be amazed at all the little things that you see that you won't see from the double-decker bus, zooming past. So, you don't have to be super fit. You don't have to have all your camping gear, but I'd certainly recommend a component of bike riding or a bike trip to anybody.
Well, obviously it was a very long time that you were away, and we haven't really got the time to go through every sort of tourist highlight, I guess, or of the entire trip. But what are perhaps some of the experiences that really stick out for you, perhaps as being real highlights then of the time you were away?
I reckon I'd probably come up with maybe a short list of 5 or 6. certainly going to Gallipoli was something that, I'm only going to do once, and it was fantastic. The ceremonies on Anzac Day were moving, colourful, exciting. But in the couple of days before that, when I cycled around with, just a couple of the kids and or friends that we had with us, that was really excellent. And to walk those places where the Australians and Turks had fought. But it's also the Turkish appreciation and respect and enjoyment of having Australians there that made it interesting as well, because we were treated very nicely, and certainly the New Zealanders as well are fondly regarded. There's the old thing going back to the First World War where they believe that there was a fair bit of respect on both sides for the opposition, and that's the case today. So that was certainly one. The second thing was a balloon ride. I'd never been up in a hot air balloon, and we knew that there's a region in Turkey called Cappadocia where it's everybody does it. It's amazing countryside. It's sort of eroded limestone and has all these sort of beehive formations that have had caves cut in them over the centuries for people to live in or house animals and, you know, pigeon houses and things. And so we thought, well, if we're going to do it once, we might as well do it where it's meant to be the best. And that was sensational. Mm. A couple of days camping with the kids after a nice day cycling was really good. To arrive somewhere and to, you know, to lie down and sleep a tired sleep from you know, physical effort, but with your children there who've enjoyed it and you've laughed with and had a good time with that day, it's a great feeling. Mm. So there's a couple of days like that where I thought, yeah, this is why I wanted to come as well. Swimming in the Greek islands. The Greek islands were probably better than I'd thought. And again, the Greeks were pretty appreciative to have us there because the tourism industry's dropped away dramatically. And I thought it'd be all package tourism and hustle and bustle. And it is in many places. But you can still find a deserted beach at that time of year, in June, on a warm day at 25 with the flat Mediterranean Sea and the pebbles that you can see down, you know, 3 metres down below. You can just do some laps of the bay and it's fantastic. Yeah, and you know that it's raining back home. So so there's four or five things, Jeremy. And, of course, Istanbul is an amazing place. And some of the cathedrals, palaces, and history there in the middle of Asia and Europe is fantastic to see.
Did you all come home friends?
With the people I met or with my own family?
With your own family.
It was quite funny. We rocked into one town and there was a couple of people from Sydney who were on a tour and we were talking to them and they said, so you're cycling? Yes. Right. That's pretty hard work. And who are you with? Oh, well, I'm cycling with the two kids. Right. Well, that's even more of an achievement, isn't it? Two teenage kids. We're all friends, yes. And I hope they'll forget the arguments and just remember the smiles.
And I mean, lastly, I guess there was a purpose behind it all, which was fundraising. How did that side of it go?
Well, awareness raising for Medicine Sans Frontières, yeah. We do a fundraising ride annually in Australia from Mount Gambier to Melbourne each year in March, specifically to raise money for MSF. The overseas rides are sort of to raise awareness. And I suppose exposure like you give us, Jeremy, is fantastic. The local press are pretty interested. Our friends and family are certainly keen. And people along the way... well, in Turkey and Greece, it wasn't easy to explain what we were doing. We didn't try too hard, unless they certainly spoke English. But it was really interesting when people said, so, you know, in a small village, so how come you're here? Why are you in this place, you know, from Australia? You've come so far. And then we'd explain it to them, and they'd think, well, that's pretty good. Because they've all sort of heard, everybody's heard about the organisation at some time. And, yeah. But the other purpose... was to spend time with my children and that worked well.
So the reverse of that thing about being in small villages as well, are there now hundreds of people in Turkey and Greece who know all about Dartmoor?
About Dartmoor? No, there's a lot of people. There's a lot of people in Turkey and Greece who know that we live in near Melbourne. Everybody's got a relative in Noble Park or Newtown. We found, yes, Sydney or Melbourne. A couple have some in Perth. But so where do you come from? Sydney or Melbourne? And we'd say, well, just near Melbourne. Yeah. It was way simpler.